Welcome to the In the Bag podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Slaughter, and here with me as always is Jazzy James Haldeman. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How was your experience at the Houston Open this weekend? You bringing us back any hot tidbits, or are we just kind of winging it still?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate because it's the last time it'll be there, and so now I'll have to like go downtown to watch the tournament. But you know, it was a nice course. It's an interesting course, given how the par fives are all set up, and at the 16th hole, if someone makes a birdie, it's a par three. You get a half price of beer for 10 minutes, and it was like $8 a beer, which is, you know, not bad for a course or whatever. And so you got $4 Modelos or Coronas or whatever. Yeah, so everyone was pretty inebriated and just yelling at the golfers. It was pretty fun.
That sounds like quite an event. Which also, did you stay for the very end of it? Did you get a birdie off Lanto Griffin's tournament winning 30-foot birdie?
No, well, I was there on Saturday.
Oh, that's right. You were there on Saturday, not Sunday. I forgot.
So, but I think it was, someone made a pretty outrageous birdie. It wasn't Lanto Griffin, but it was in the group he was in, because he was in that final group. It was him, Sink, and somebody else, and it was like an 18-foot birdie. It might have been Carlos Ortiz, I think. Okay. He putted it like off the fringe. And so it was fun, and it wasn't very crowded at all. And I'm sure people saw that on the telecast, but it was a good time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Two things. The podcast is now 3 of 5 in winners. You got Neiman. The first week we both got Sebastian Munoz, and then we got Lanto Griffin this weekend, which means we're doing all right. Currently 2-1 in money back for money put in total through our first 5 weeks, so pretty proud of that. My question for you is, I read that our boy Maverick McNealy went out and shot, what, -7, -8 on Sunday to put himself in the top 10, and he did it on the back of some advice from his girlfriend, who is an LPGA player, Danielle Kang. I think she's won one major. Very, very good player. She gave him some advice. So my question to you is, if we want the podcast to take off, a la McNealy on Sunday, do we start taking advice from Anna and Julie on how we should be going about things? Like, do we shoot a -8 if we bring them on for a week?
I think it's worth a shot.
All right, we'll check availability. We'll get back to you. I think it'd be some fun analysis.
You know, last week was really interesting. McNealy backdoored the top 10, but there was, I think I sent you the picture on my phone, like all my guys were like right on the top 10 cusp, and there must have been 17 or 18 guys that shot -10 and -11 to be right there on the cusp, and you know, that switched a lot of money both ways.
Yeah,
particularly for sure. With how difficult the last two holes were for everyone, and so it was interesting to watch if you were betting on it or whatever. You know, it matters less in DraftKings, because if you get a top 10, it's a top 10 no matter what, as opposed to in, you know, when you're betting on it, if someone's a top 10 and you have to split it with all the other people that would be in that 10th spot.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a different situation, but I can't imagine. And for us, we're talking about betting in small sums, but for those guys, this is, you know, Lanto Griffin just made his livelihood for the next 3 years, and he stood over that shot at 18 and he was like, I'm not going left, and just bailed right and hit it in the rough and ended up making par to win. But, you know, I can't imagine standing over two difficult holes like 17 and 18 with those sorts of tee shots and having to make them in those situations. But it made, you know, with that many guys close to in contention, it made for really good television on Sunday, and I enjoyed watching the last 4, 5, 6 holes.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that really disappointed me was that, you know, obviously the caliber player wasn't there, but they just didn't have a lot of players that were super long. And so my friend and I, who went with me to the tournament, we kind of camped out at 12, which is on the first day, I think was like a 310-yard par 4. And there was a number of guys that tried to drive it. And on Saturday, it was like 343, and the pin was kind of tucked away in the back left. And so a lot of people, we only saw one person even try to go for it.
That is a bummer. You didn't get to see any bombs. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we saw Cam Champ tee off, though, like, you know, on 13, which was one of the par fives, and he like shanked it left, unfortunately. But his swing is super wild if you, in person. Just the how quick it and, you know, the torque he gets on it. It's one of a kind, and I'd recommend it even if you aren't really a fan. You want someone with a little more nuanced type of game. But his it's pretty magical.
Yeah, I saw an interview with him. He said that his only, well, not his only focus, but his main focus when he's driving the ball is to get his belt loop or his belt buckle faced at his target as quickly as possible, and everything else takes care of itself, which is just wild to me. So much torque.
Yeah, and it shows. So, but let's review. You know, like as you said, you had Lanto Griffin winning with a tenth of a unit or something like that.
Yeah.
So that was a nice payday for you. We had we were high on a number of guys. Let's see, we had I was on McCarthy, who ended up sneaking there at the end. Tringali had a shot to make top 10, but he bogeyed on 17 or 18. Zhang was on fire on Sunday and finished, I think, what, top 4 or top 5?
Yeah, top 4, I think.
Yeah, and had him both top 10 and top 20. And then Carlos Ortiz had a very solid tournament himself and finished in the top 10. So overall, really nice day. I mean, it could have been better a little bit if McCarthy would have putted a little better on one of the first 2 days. Like it was Thursday or Friday, he missed a bunch of putts, and he's normally like gaining 5 strokes around on putting. And then Hostler had a lot of opportunities and never capitalized them on Sunday. I think he shot just even.
Yeah, and McNealy coming with a top 20 finish, which was pretty helpful. I was pretty big on that one. I had Lanto Griffin stacked, win, top 10, top 20, so he just kind of made the weekend for me. I was convinced, not necessarily that he was going to win, but he was going to go and have a really good week, so that was extremely helpful. And then only reason my week could have been bigger was if, you know, Munoz had played better on Friday and Saturday. I think he went -2 on Friday. I got lucky enough for him to make the cut. Played even round on Saturday and then went low. He went -5 on Sunday, which was a really solid day. But, I mean, ultimately, he had a top 36 finish or something like that, which is great for him. But after 7 birdies on Thursday, I was kind of hoping for a little more. I thought he was pretty locked in outside of hitting a couple balls in the water on Thursday, but just didn't really come to fruition until he started hitting some really tight iron shots and making some putts on Sunday. But yeah, it was a fun tournament to watch. We both had guys play really well, and that makes the tournament more fun to watch than if you are sitting around and watching a bunch of guys that you have money on not play well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a good tournament all around, and hopefully we can keep it going for this tournament. So this tournament is in Japan.
No, we're in South Korea.
Or Korea, I'm sorry. They're doing the skins thing in Japan on Sunday afterwards or whatever. So, but that's just like Day, Woods,
Matsuyama.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. I'll be interested in that. I wonder if they had some odds on that. I haven't seen any yet, but it would be fun to see just to have a little bit on that, just for recreational.
Just for Jason Day.
Yeah, just for Jason Day. This is obviously the best tournament we've had this year. The field is very stacked. There's no cut. That obviously changes how you do things on DraftKings. It doesn't really change, in my opinion, on how you bet, because even if there's no cut, if guys don't play well enough, you're not going to make the money anyway. Tell us about this course, the history, and what we should be looking for.
Yeah, like you said, this is the beginning of the Asian Swing, the PGA Tour, the first of 3 weeks. They'll be playing there this week, South Korea, next week Japan, the week after they'll be in China. For this week, we're going to Jeju Island, South Korea. It's the club at Nine Bridges. Interestingly enough, that is the course that Sung Jae-im grew up playing on, and it's only been played there twice so far. The first two winners were Justin Thomas 2 years ago, and then Brooks Koepka won it last year. So he can win non-majors, it just doesn't happen all that often. Honestly, the fact that the PGA Tour is here is only the second coolest thing about Jeju Island to me. The first is that same island is where a fantastic reality show on Netflix called Hyori's Bed and Breakfast is filmed. It is a show about two Korean pop stars who are married that open up their home to like Korean travelers who are on the island, because it's a huge tourist spot. Jeju Island is a beautiful place. And they like host them with their home as a B&B for a week at a time. Basically the most wholesome programming on television. I cannot recommend that show enough. So if you find yourself needing something to do, if the golf rounds are a little long for you or a little too early and you need something to fall asleep to, just put on Aori's Bed and Breakfast. Enjoy yourself. It's also on Jeju Island. It's wonderful. As for the actual golf tournament, it's a reduced field, like you mentioned. It's made up of the top 60 from, I believe, the FedEx Cup standings that are available and willing to come play. And then it's filled out with highly rated players from different tours in Asia that are primarily Korean, and then sponsor exemptions. So we get Chase Koepka for actually the third time this year, mostly because I think these tournaments want Brooks to come play, but I'm not entirely sure. So we have 78 players this week. Like you said, it doesn't have a cut, and that shapes our lineup process primarily for daily fantasy. You said it obviously impacts. How do you think it impacts you this week? What are you looking for more this week as opposed to things you'd be looking at when there is a cut line?
I think basically I think it's a little easier to build a stars and scrubs lineup because at least you know you're going to get some points to kind of bring you up at the bottom. You can take chances at with some guys that may have high upside, but really, you know, would have a low probability of making the cut, or fairly low, but maybe they'll just be playing well that weekend. So I really think you can get three guys that are above like 8.8K and four guys above like 8K if you're really wanting to go that route, which I don't think is crazy. So you can do some stuff like that. And so in that vein, though, I think maybe building a medium build lineup is going to be a contrarian in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think the first point you made with stars and scrubs is really interesting, because I think for me and probably for you as well, we've seen our most success when we have six guys make the cut, which is really hard to do with the current cut process at 65 and ties. So with the quality of competitor you have in this format, even the cheaper guys can go low. It creates a lot of interesting opportunities when you don't have to worry about guys making the cut and playing it safe, that maybe on a Saturday or Sunday they go super low and put themselves in a position where maybe they don't win the tournament, but they're giving you a top 10, top 20, where they just wouldn't have had that opportunity before.
Absolutely.
Actual course statistics and information. We're going to a par 72 again this week. It measures around 7,200 from the championship tees. So we're going to a course that's shorter than we've been playing. And we're at elevation here. I think we're about 600 feet above sea level. I think it's built into kind of a volcano and on the coast. It's a pretty interesting course. And we also have four par fives again. So if the conditions are good, the course can yield incredibly low scores. The fairways are wide. The greens are pretty big. This gives guys an opportunity to play thinking golf, position themselves where they want to be. And if you can hit good tee shots, good approach shots, you're going to be sitting very pretty here. Koepka won last year with a minus 21, but on the flip side of that, the course is similar to like a Pebble Beach. Plays on the coast, and that can provide some really strong winds at times. 2 years ago, that was the case, and Justin Thomas won with only a minus 9, and actually played the 31st toughest on the PGA Tour that season. Right now, the winds are expected to stay low. Jeju Island is pretty famous for changing weather patterns, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. And I mean, once you kind of submit your lineups and the tournament starts, there's not much you can do about it, but it's good to have guys that are malleable players, can shape the ball both ways, are good with the driver off the tee and good with irons off the tee, just so you can play a little bit differently. And like I said, ultimately it all depends on the weather, on how low these guys are going to be able to go. But with the course layout the way it is, and assuming there's not a ton of wind as is currently projected, I think this week there's six stats that we really want to look at for the week. First, par 5 scoring. We harp on it every single time we have a par 72, but you want guys that can take advantage of these types of holes where scoring is just ultimately much easier. We also want players who are going to be good strokes gained tee to green. You want people that can position themselves where they want to be off the tee and then take advantage of that once they're where they want to be. As a complement to strokes gained tee to green, I also looked at greens in regulation ranking and sand save percentage ranking. Depending on where you are, you're either putting yourself on the green or you're missing it. And at a course with over 100 bunkers, you have a decent opportunity of your approaches or your scrambling around the green coming from the sand. And then I looked at strokes gained putting. The last two winners have both been in top 21 in strokes gained putting for the season and have kind of won the tournament on that back. Like I said, Kevin Na made the most feet of putts in PGA history over the course of four rounds, and then last week, Lanto Griffin sunk a 30-footer to basically win the tournament for him, and then a 55-foot two-putt. Also, because there's no cut, I looked at birdies per round for each of the guys. You want somebody who, yeah, they may be playing bad the first couple of days, but they're always going to give themselves a chance to go out and make a lot of birdies and shoot low scores just to kind of keep you in it. And I think those are the six things we want to look at and build our lineups around for this week.
With that said, are there any guys that you think that are clubbing up, that are on the rise coming into the week, or clubbing down, falling in your rankings, or and how you view them as a player, or just their form is poor?
Yeah, I think because we have a smaller field here, I only have a couple guys for each section this week. You know, we would talk about Lanto Griffin a lot here, but he's not in the field. First is Ryan Palmer. He's only played once this year, but he had a tie for 37th at Shriners, which was the strongest field we've seen up until this point. The course fits him really well. He's first in birdies per round so far on the PGA Tour this year, and he's top 20 in strokes gained, tee to green, and par 5 scoring average. And then he also holds the course record here with a 62 on Sunday that propelled him to a third place finish last year behind Brooks and Gary Woodland. So he's a guy that I think really mixed value, especially on DraftKings. He's only 7,200 with the ability to go really low and have a good performance at this course. Second guy that I am pretty high on coming into the week, Sung Jae-in. Like I said, he grew up playing on this course. He led the PGA Tour in cuts and cuts made in top 10s last year. I just think he's due to win, and it'd be cool to see a storybook win on his home island. Club down, Matt Jones. He withdrew on us again. Sad face. That's all I have for notes. And then Jonathan Vegas is my other guy. He's missed the last two cuts at a combined 5 over par. And, you know, just from watching him prior to last weekend, he's a pretty emotive golfer. He talks to his ball a lot after he hits it. But before he had even, like, finished his swing, it seemed like last year, he was yelling at all of his shots. There's just something off right now for him. And I think he's really searching. So I'm just not high on Jonathan Vegas as well this week.
Jonathan Vegas also is in my club down section. I have nothing really to add to that, other than the fact that I was disappointed with how he played, because I felt like he had built a lot of momentum, and he seems to have ruined any progress that he, you know, had made coming off of last year. Yeah, I don't have too many guys in this section, honestly. One guy that I think is kind of interesting, I wouldn't say he's clubbing up, but he had at least one good performance, and that was Phil Mickelson. He's historically done well at Pebble Beach, and if you, like you said, this is a similar course, this may be, if he's looking more in form this year, that may be a play for a lot of people, or at least one that's not going to be highly owned. And then the other guy I think that is playing well, and that was, he was killing it in the European Tour, is Rafa Cabrera-Bello. His price is obviously reflective of that at 9.6K on DraftKings, which is extremely high, but he has been playing very well over there. And then as far as a club down, in addition to
Vegas.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. There's a couple guys that I'm not sure of, like Nate Lashley hasn't played well this year, and I kind of expected him to take advantage of some of these courses that were shorter that would be better for him. Keith Mitchell, yeah, I don't know. I think Nat Lashley is really where I've been most disappointed with. He has not built on the win that he had last year, and I think that is certainly disappointing for him, as well as some of our DFS owners.
Rafa Cabrera-Bello is just such an interesting case study for me this week, and like golfers that I don't like and don't ever want to play in a lineup, but like you said, he's on fire on the European Tour. 5 of his last 6 starts have been top 10s and a missed cut, so he's on fire. Regardless of what you think the competition level in the European Tour is compared to that, that's still incredible consistency. But he's priced like $300 more than a Gary Woodland. I'm just never going to play Rafa Cabrera-Bello over Gary Woodland when he's $300 more expensive. Also, just not a big Rafa fan. Like, just an interesting study in value and, like, you know, sort of the course horse mentality. He's also got like 2 top 7 finishes here in the only 2 years they've ever played the tournament here, that sort of thing. So I think a lot of things are working in his favor, and I probably expect him to have a good finish, but I just can't bring myself to play him.
Yeah, I tend to agree. With that said, let's jump into some guys that we like here with the expensive taste. As per usual, do 9K and up, 7.5 to 9K and beneath 7.5. So we'll start with you. We've touched on a couple of these guys already, but I guess if you had to pick one guy for value and one guy who's just the best player, where would you go?
I think the best player, best course fit, is Justin Thomas. He is one of the few guys at the very top of the leaderboard who has a start this year, and he finished 4th at the Safeway Open, where he played very well. I think he was first on the tour in birdies per round last year, something like that. He was first in par 5 scoring. Hits a lot of greens. He's great strokes gained tee to green. And he has a win here. He's familiar with the course. And then I think like a top 40 finish the other year. So I think, you know, your chalk is your chalk in this tournament. I think he's the guy that is playing best coming in, and the course fits him the best. The best value, if we're going all the way down to 9, is between Jason Day and Gary Woodland. Jason Day has, like, 2 top 11 finishes and his 2 starts here. But for us, and I know Jason's your boy, and we have this conversation, you know, relatively often, we just don't know necessarily what we're going to get, which Jason Day is going to show up. But I think at 9.5, he has the talent of at least a Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Hideki Matsuyama, probably still on at his best, is as good as Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas. So I think we're getting a guy that has good course history, super cheap price, course fits him well, scores on par fives, good putter. He just has a very strong all-around game, which I think favors here. So I think Jason Day is interesting. And I've talked about Gary Woodland a little bit, just think a guy that the course fits him very, very well, with a second-place finish last year, and I think he's a little underpriced for the talent level he has compared to the guys around him. Anybody from this price that you particularly like stands out to you, or you think's good value, or you want to stay away from?
I think the person who I think is the best, I think, is Brooks.
We went out on an island with these plays, with Brooks and Justin Thomas as our best golfers.
Yeah, well, I mean, the facts are the facts. And I think this tournament is more similar to the course, the WGC event that they had in Memphis, the St. Jude. I think this is a much more similar type tournament than the one he played in earlier. You know, his brother's here, so I think that's part of the reason why he's here. But a lot of the good guys are here, and I think that that's going to pique his interest, if you will. So I think that he is definitely my top play. And then the best value, I think I'm going to have to agree with you on Gary Woodland. His success in the West Coast tournaments and just the way his ball flight is, and he hits those low stingers. It's not going to get caught up in the wind. He's improved his putting and around the green play. I think that is definitely the play to go with. Yeah, I think that'd be my favorite value.
What are your thoughts on the young guys in this price point this week? We have Hovland, Morikawa, and M, all 9,700 and above. Do you like any of those guys? Do you think any of them offer anything that somebody else doesn't?
I'm not quite sure what to do with them. I know that they're all very talented, but I think they're much closer to being like the 15th best golfers in the world than they are like Hovland's like 4th most expensive. I think that's pretty wild. And so I think they're all a little overpriced. I think M is probably the closest to like where his value should be. Like, I think these guys should be under 10K. I don't necessarily understand why they've shown the consistency to be up at 10 point, you know, above a Fleetwood, or even like Day and Woodland, who, you know, are proven winners. So I think that's a little interesting to me. And then I guess if I'm staying away from one particular person, I think it's got to be Sergio here or Rafa Cabrera-Bello. I'm not sure. One of those guys. I think Sergio, though. Sergio, to me, just his putting's not good enough. He's not good enough around the greens. He's just always inconsistent. You know, I think even like Leishman, I think his skill set just fits this course. Like, I don't think he's going to be highly owned, but he's similar to Woodland, where they have these low, you know, flight paths with their ball. And we saw how Leishman played in windy conditions, very windy conditions, in the British Open last year.
Right.
And I don't think that, you know, if the weather's going to be bad, I think that you should play Leishman.
Yeah, I agree. I think Leishman also, I think he has at least one top 5 finish here. So he's played well at the course before. And I say those things, but we don't have a ton of course history here. We only have 2 years of data, but there's 2 years of data of a lot of guys having really good finishes. And Leishman is a guy that has had a good finish here. So I do like that play. I guess my only note on the young guys is they're kind of birdie machines. And this is a course, and it's not skins play, but it kind of feels similar to that, where like, you know, your bad holes don't matter as much because you always have an opportunity to go out and make another birdie and distance yourself. And they're guys that are going to play aggressive. And we'll talk about Matt Wolf in a little bit, but I think this probably favors him more than the other young guys. He's more appropriately priced. But I think there's something to be said for the aggressiveness with which the way the young guys go after pins right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my thing is, like, to me, they're ranked as if they are playing at their ceiling as opposed to playing at their median. And that, sure. I think that's what bothers me the most out of it all.
Yeah, I think that's a completely fair take.
So moving on, going to the mid-tier guys, usually I'm pretty interested in this portion. I don't know if I am that interested in these guys. There's a couple guys that stand out. Wolf was one of them. I think honestly my favorite two plays I think in here would be either Kevin Na, just the way he's been putting, I think really matters. The fact that he probably has some familiarity with these Asian circuits. I mean, I know he's obviously been a PGA pro for a very long time, but he has done, you know, these circuits and is obviously a proponent of playing out there. And then Corey Connors, who's just a GIR machine. So he's just, you just know he's going to have plenty of birdie opportunities. And I think I like the way that Connors has a wide variety of types of shots that he has where he's not a one-trick pony.
Yeah, it's incredibly important this week to be able to shape the ball in both directions, hit it low, hit it high, do a bunch of different things in this course. So if, you know, that, if that is something that somebody has in the bag, you're going to want to take a harder look at them than you are somebody that just hits a fade every single time.
Right, which is kind of like one of the problems I have with Day. But, you know, Day was working on that stinger at the end of the year, and I think that will help him in a tournament like this. But yeah, I like Connors and I like Na, and I think I like Na the most because I think he's just on fire. I mean, and he's not as high priced as I would suspect. You know, whenever you have someone like Joaquin Niemann, that's, you know, a little higher than him, but just guys that, you know, just haven't had the success that he's had this year.
Yeah, if Kevin Na turns the putter on the way he did in Vegas, you can't find a reason to not play him because that was just an incredible performance. And if you're putting like that, it's going to win you a lot of tournaments or put you in contention for a lot of tournaments, especially at a place where you got to make a lot of birdies because you don't miss a cut. My favorite play from this price point, I have to go with Matt Wolf. He's first on the tour in par 5 scoring average so far this year. He's a top 30 in strokes gained tee to green. He's 11th in greens and regulation percentage. And if you talk to or read interviews with his coaches from college, they say his most impressive thing isn't his length or his ability to score on par 5s. It's the way he putts the ball. And I just don't think when we saw him in Vegas, he was at his best there. So I think he's going to provide himself with a ton of birdie opportunities. Guy I like here as well, and he's very low owned, is Ian Poulter. He's played very well on the European Tour so far this year, except for his miscut last week. And I think this is the type of tournament that fits Ian Poulter, where, you know, you kind of just go out and you try and score as low as possible. And it's fit him, you know, in his two starts here. He's got a tie for 10th and a tie for 15th. I just think he's probably underpriced for his course history and his style of play. And then the other guy I really like is Ches Reavie. Length doesn't matter as much here, but he's a strokes gained tee to green monster. He's going to hit a lot of fairways, give himself a lot of opportunities to hit good iron shots. And he's 15th and 7th in his two trips here. So it's a guy that likes the course, and I think he provides a lot of opportunity here.
Yeah, I agree with you on Reavie. I think I'm deciding how many builds I want to do, if I'm going to just do one or like 20. I think Reavie is definitely in play here for me. I'm leaning towards one, and I'm not sure that he would make the cut, but yeah, I don't know. I'm fooling around with it. At the moment, he's in one of my, in my core lineup. And then let's go to these cheap guys, which I think are definitely, I think there are some that are interesting. I think what I said at the beginning is that I think it's easy to do stars and scrubs, and I think it is easy to do it in the sense that your risk, your risk is just doesn't exist in the way that a normal tournament is constructed. But at the same time, I'm really not in love with this section either. A lot of the guys at the very bottom are these Korean tour players who, you know, just don't have the talent that a normal PGA player has. And
yeah, they historically don't really play that well in this tournament either. They're not like top finishers. You don't get a random guy go out and finish third or something like that. So they are very good golfers and may see them on the PGA Tour someday, but right now they just aren't as talented as the guys at the top.
Yeah, and, you know, Phil, I think, is interesting. You just don't know what you're going to get from him. And then you have a guy like Luke List, who's a long hitter. You would think this would favor him, but he is not really in form. Keith Mitchell is another birdie machine. And what kind of grass is this? Poa, right?
We're on big grass.
We're on bent grass. He's not a good bent grass putter. You only play Keith Mitchell if it's Bermuda. So I don't know. steer us in the right direction here, because honestly, I'm not in love.
Yeah, I think it's the guy I'm going to go to in this like 7,500 and below section starts with one guy, and it's somebody I talked about in my club up, is Ryan Palmer. Off a third here last year, course record set on Sunday. Guy's a birdie machine, first on the PGA Tour in birdies per round right now, top 20 in par 5 scoring, and top 11 in strokes gained tee to green. And he's played well in the one tournament he's played, so he's my guy at the lower price point. I like Nate Lashley a little more than you, not in love with him, but I don't think he's a terrible play if you want to go lower. He's a par 5 scoring machine, but he doesn't make as many birdies as some other guys. And then the other guy I think I like, if you want to go cheaper, Adam Long. He's top 20 strokes gained tee to green. He's top 30 in birdies per round for the PGA Tour this season. And he scores like 4.6 on his par 5 birdie average. And he gives you an opportunity to play some more expensive guys up top. But I think for me, everything at the lower price points begins and ends with Ryan Palmer. But I think he's going to be highly owned. So if you're trying to separate yourself, he's not the best play. But I mean, I think it's chalk that if you want to play this way, you kind of have to invest in.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think as it's showing, it shows List as someone who's going to be the most owned in this section, which I think makes sense given his profile.
Sure.
Pat Perez, you know, he's done well here in the past, right?
Yeah, two really good finishes.
So he's going to be highly owned. I don't know. I never really have a feel for Pat Perez. I think maybe like Kevin Tway is kind of interesting to me. He is a fairly long hitter. This is a type of course that he can do well in. He's just not very good.
Max Homa as well.
Yeah. Max Homa. I mean, if you want to go really cheap, Max Homa is definitely interesting. You know, I personally have a soft spot in my heart for Affie Barnrat. So maybe I'll play him. I don't know if there's a best Asian play, but there probably is, and I bet he is worth a pretty penny. And so I may do that.
Real quick, while we're on this, what is your take on Max Homa's question he posted to Twitter the other day about if somebody's ever got drunk in South Korea and woke up in North Korea? Because it sounds like he's trying to film The Hangover 4 while he's over here for the tournament. I wonder if, A, if he's even going to show up for the tournament. Is he going to be in North Korea drunk somewhere? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, it's a very important question that he posed to his Twitter audience.
For his sake, I hope that he has never done it. And for the other people's sake, I hope they don't ever do it.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to wake up over in North Korea.
It's always interesting to me because, like, you know, I'm not exactly sure, like, how far this is away from Seoul, but Seoul is, like, 40 miles from North Korea. And
which is wild. That's so crazy to me.
Yeah, that's, like, not even across Houston. And so I just, yeah, it is mind-boggling to me about how close those countries, I mean, obviously they border each other, but just the fact that Seoul, which is probably the most Western city in Asia, maybe not the most modern, but certainly the most Western, and it's just so close to North Korea.
Yeah. One final note here, Justin Hadley, somebody that I'm like at a lower price point. He's really good strokes gained tee to green, and he's scored really well on par fives. It's a lot of greens and regulation. So I think there are guys. I'm just outside of Ryan Palmer, not really in love with any of them.
Yeah. And so I think this is going to make some of the construction really hard. But I think that's what makes it interesting. If it was easy, you know, it wouldn't be any fun. But, you just have decisions to make.
Yeah. What are you doing this week? Like, if I gave you $50 or whatever and I said, go play a single entry lineup, are you going to target Stars and Scrubs? Or do you think you're going to try and play sort of a middle-of-the-pack lineup?
So I have Woodland, Day, and Reavie as my core three right now. And if I were to do that, let's see, if I put in Appy Barnrat and Kevin Tway, what does that give me? I have $9,500 remaining, so I could go up and get another big guy like a Leishman. Or, yeah, you know, I could do something different where maybe I do a Kevin Na instead of Tway or something, and then I go with a different type of lower guy. Let's see, if I do Kevin Na on this, what happens? So that would be four guys that are above 8.3 and above, and then you still have $7,700 left over for someone that's halfway decent. So you
can
play,
that's like a Poulter and a Poulter. Howell or something like that, or a Poulter and a Perez, right?
Exactly. So you're just off the cut from Corey Connors. But, yeah, so it would be Woodland, Appy Barnhart, Nah, Poulter, Day, Reavy. Like, I kind of like that lineup.
Yeah, I think both sides are very, very valid. Like, you could play Fleetwood, Day, Woodland, which is just a very insane lineup. I think Day's lower floor, but a higher ceiling type guy. And then you can play Palmer, Adam Long, and come up with something else from there. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to do it both ways. And I don't really think you're going wrong with either way. I would say the one thing, if you're looking for a high finish in Daily Fantasy this week, you really, really want to get the winner, or at least a couple guys in the top five, because you're going to have to finish up there, because there's no, like, having somebody who picks the winner have two or three guys miss the cut to rely on to boost you in your scores.
Yeah, I think you're going to have the winner, no doubt about it. Yeah, with that said, let's move on to the betting. We'll start from the back, and we'll work our way. Oh, actually, before we do that, we'll do our four section. Is there anyone, if you were to tell people that the highly owned guy that you are avoiding, who is that going to be? So, like, projected 15% up, and that you're avoiding.
The highest owned guy that I'm going to avoid this week will be Joaquin Neiman. Just think, for what he's done since his win, around his price point, he's projected at 20.5 right now on Roto. I'd rather have Matt Wolf. I'd rather have Chez Reavy, both in similar price points. So I think if we had to go with a highly owned guy, I'm just not going to play Neiman this week.
Okay, I like that. You know, I like Neiman, so I think that it is what it is. But I think that's definitely fair.
I think Joaquin Neiman's a good golfer. He just hasn't been in form his past couple tournaments, and I think Matt Wolf's a better golfer for $100 more.
You know, I hate to say this, but I think the person that I'm going to avoid is Justin Thomas, because...
Interesting, okay.
I just do not like the guys at the bottom enough. I think you really have to go with a bunch of mid guys, so you'd have to go with Thomas, and then you'd have to go with, like, Reavy, Poulter, Connors, Nah, or something like that, and I just don't know if that lineup is going to have enough upside to really get it going. But the other guy, I think, and he just misses the cut here, but I would definitely avoid Luke List.
Okay, the Thomas thing is interesting, and I agree with the logic, because even if I do, like, so my favorite low money guy is Palmer, paired him with Justin Thomas, and I've only got 77, 75 left to, like, figure out how to use it, whether it's Perez, Moore, Poulter, and Connors, or whatever. I think that lineup can play really well, but I think it's dependent on Justin Thomas winning. So if you're playing a lineup with Justin Thomas in it, Justin Thomas has to win. Like, that's just kind of how it is. We'll see. It's more of a
game theory play, I think. It's a game theory play in addition to the fact I just don't like the bottom. And so...
Okay, Professor Nash.
Yeah, so I think that's what it is. I'm a big game theory guy when it comes to DFS. But betting, you know, is a completely different story. So let's move on to that. Admittedly, my book doesn't even have the lines up for this yet.
Yeah, give me guys. I got lines up.
Okay. So, well, let's start with you. Let's move over to the top 20 and figure out our way from there. I think, and this has been working very well for me this year, that if you pick guys that kind of have the higher odds, that are kind of like, I assume maybe like a Corey Connors or those, like,
since you don't have lines up, I'm curious, based on the rest of the season, what do you think Corey Connors' line is this week for top 20?
It's probably like plus 350.
Plus 190.
Wow. Okay. So that's really high. So he may be higher. So he's a guy that I think would probably have higher recognition in a betting format, and therefore his line wouldn't be as good as compared to DFS, where I think people are more aware of other players.
Yes, I think he's a little bit higher probably here, and like if you just like listed out the top guys in DFS by money and by betting lines, but the difference is that 20%, greater than 20% of the field this week makes top 20. Actually, it's over 27%, I think, of the field makes top 20 this week. So no matter where you are, you're like the only guys with bad odds are like Adam Schenck is the first person at plus 400 this week. So nobody has insane odds, but just because so much of the field is going to make a top 20. So Corey Connors, being one of the better golfers, is going to be around plus 200. I think the best line you get for this is even for like guys that are middle of the pack, or like Varner at plus 225, Ryan Palmer at plus 210. I think CT Pan at plus 350 is interesting, but like there just aren't a ton of like the big money lines you've been looking for, just solely based on the fact that there are so few guys in the tournament this week.
Well, I found one bet I do like, but it's just a complete prop, is that I'm going to pick Appy Barnrat to finish as the top Asian for plus 1600.
Oh, that's all right. That's interesting. I think the other good value here is Ryan Moore plus 190 isn't bad, but he's the same as Corey Connors, and you like Connors more. So, yeah, the top 20 lines are not where you're going to butter your bread this week, in my opinion.
All right, I see that. I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay, I went on to a different book here. The lines are a little more all over the place. Like, I'd probably play Appy Barnrat for top 20. On my book, Ryan Palmer is plus 260.
Yeah, so not that much different.
Yeah, it's like 20 cents more.
Yeah, so, but Appy Barnrat is plus 400 here.
Okay, yeah, so that's the same. Interesting. All right, so with that said, so it is a little different in how we're going to have to play this weekend. So a top 10 is really like a top 20 in other events in terms of the percentage of players.
I think that this week, just because the field is relatively top heavy and small, it's almost like you want to make money line bets in other sports where you kind of take worse odds. It's like, for winners, as opposed to putting a bunch of money in on a straight bet, right? Like the Rockets against the Oklahoma City Thunder on a random night where, you know, maybe the Rockets are plus 450 to win, but now we're going to add a money line in for Rockets minus 110 to get a little bit better odds, but you still think they can make it, right? Because they're minus 11 at home or whatever. So I think this is a week where normally we want to avoid top 20 guys from the top who are minus 110, minus 125, but those might actually be some of our best bets going into this weekend if you're looking at top 20. But in my opinion, it's just not where you're going to butter your bread this week. To say it again, I hate that I said it again, but I think top 10 and winners are probably where you're going to make a lot of money, and I'm not going to do as much straight betting. I'm going to do more DFS this week. I just think it's the way to go.
All right, I like that. So if you're doing top 10, you know, odds are definitely a lot better here. Who do you like and who do you not like? Some of these are kind of interesting, though. I think they're a little more interesting than a normal top 10.
Oh, I 100% agree. Just because there's so few people, you get better, like, you get more interesting odds. Matt Wolf plus 275, top 10. I think that's a really fun play. Something I'm going to be looking to do. Like Corey Connors, a plus 475, like you talked about, is a really interesting play.
On this book, he's plus 600.
There you go. Yeah, so that's even better.
Chez Reavie at plus 400.
Gary Woodland's plus 210 for a top 10 finish, which I don't know. I feel like that's stealing. Almost cash. Ian Poulter's plus 350. I think that's interesting. There are more fun top 10 lines than we usually get. I'm trying to think if there's anybody like here that I just really don't like for their price. I think Fleetwood at plus 150 is a little low for, like, he just doesn't make a ton of birdies, but he's also, like, has the best bogey avoidance on the PGA Tour over the last however many events, or maybe all of last year. But that's not really what pays here unless the weather gets really bad. If the weather's really bad, you want to line up with Fleetwood in it, because he's just not going to make mistakes. It's kind of like it was at the Open Championship last year, right? Like, he finished second on the back of just not making mistakes.
Yeah. But for some reason, I feel like, and maybe it's a little different with this course because it's the top 10 is, you know, it's what, 14% of the players. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot better chance, but I feel like his upside is just capped. And that's kind of like why I don't really like him in DFS either. But I feel like you could just put a lot of money at him at minus like 125 or something to make a top 20. Yeah, minus 125, and he's going to, like, crush it.
Yeah, that's where I really like. So, like, when I was talking about the, like, taking guys in minus odds, that's somebody I really, really like. You look at guys that have made all the cuts this year on DFS, they score, like, Putnam has made 3 cuts and scores 104 points. Justin Thomas, 2 cuts, 102 points. Hovland, 92 points. He's made all of his cuts. But then you get down to, like, 82 points before you find, or 81.5 for Tommy Fleetwood, who's made 8 cuts. Like, he's incredibly consistent, but never really, like, as the kids say, pops off and just goes for a ton of points because he just doesn't make that many birdies. So I think he's safer as, like, a top 20 play as opposed to a top 10 or a win sort of thing this week.
Yeah, okay. And then moving forward to winners, I mean, there's so many good people in this field. I think there's a couple guys that stand out that have pretty good value. Like, you know, it's funny. I'm not playing him, but I think it's funny that we mentioned that, like, we thought it was wild that, like, Matsuyama was, like, plus 1,600 in, like, that one tournament with nobody in it, and he's plus 1,800 in this tournament with all these people in it.
I actually have him at plus 1,600 with this tournament with all these people in it.
Like, that's, I mean, it's just, like, that was crazy value for him, even if he didn't
win. I mean, Justin Thomas is the same here as he was at the Safeway Open.
Yeah, like, that's wild. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I think if you want to play Justin Thomas, this is the bet you make on him. He's unless you come up with some crazy lineup that looks good in daily fantasy, you avoid him there. You know, top 20 is minus 500 for me. I think this is where you play Justin Thomas if you're going to play and kind of just have some fun with it as opposed to trying to work him in somewhere else.
I think my favorite play out of all these is Ches Reavie at plus 5,000. I think where he is in comparison to other people, like he's with on Poulter, Glover, Perez, Mickelson, Sabatini, Hatton. And to me, he's very obviously the best player out of all those people. And so the fact that he's at plus 5,000 and he's below guys like Neiman or Willett or something like that is interesting. So I think I like Ches there. And then going up, if you want to go up higher, I think Sungjae Im is probably the best bang for your buck odds, where he's in the same grouping as Woodland, Day, Bellow, and Horschel, but he's the highest priced guy on DFS out of all of those people. Yeah. And so I think maybe to me that would be the most interesting, the best value, the two best values to me on the board.
I think Matt Wolf at plus 4,000 is really, really good. Is there any like high number that you super like or 100-1 or better that you just think is a really interesting play this week?
Oh, if we're going like way down the board.
Yeah, if you were going deep into because I usually can find one that I think is interesting and like would enjoy playing. I guess Adam Long at 125-1 is probably the most interesting play that I can find on here this week.
I don't like any of them. I don't think any of them really have a chance to win.
The longest odds I can find that I think are something that I will bet are Ryan Palmer at 75-1. I like that play a lot. Connors is 66-1 on here. I like that play a little bit. But I think, like I said, I just think this is a week where I probably focus a little more on daily fantasy and trying to build really solid lineups. And then, you know, just do a little bit less traditional betting than I usually do, because in a field this strong where a lot of these guys haven't played recently or, you know, just, and also feel this small, you just never know who's kind of going to pop off. Probably stick to the guys I really, really like and take less risks on guys that I just think are interesting.
Yeah, no doubt. And if we had your Mickelson play, your play that you may go out on and that would cost you a lot of money if it didn't work out, who would that person be?
So last week, my Mickelson play was Lanto Griffin. So I'm pretty pumped. I'm going to try and go 2-for-2 here. And I'm going to give myself better odds this time. I'm going to give myself two guys. Ryan Palmer, I just think his 62 on Sunday last year and his performance in his first tournament this year are too interesting at the numbers you get him to pass up. So I'm going to be playing a decent amount of Ryan Palmer in betting. And then you'll appreciate my second guy, who's your favorite golfer, Jason Day. I'm going to dip into the Jason Day pool here. I know I usually don't do it. Recently, we haven't known we were going to get from him the last couple of years, but he's got such good finishes here. I think he's one of the most talented players on the tour when he's playing well. Of course, fits his game so well that I think he's got a really good chance to win in top 10 and top 20 or wherever I decide to play him, but really excited about the risk and the fun of watching both of these guys this week in a weekend I don't have to worry about either one of them missing the cut. I get to take a chance on all 4 days.
Yeah, I think mine's going to be Gary Woodland in the same type of vein that after he won, he was inconsistent at best.
He didn't have a top 30 the rest of the year last year.
Yeah, and so he just wasn't playing well, and he's not really in form, but I like his price point, and I think I may just top 10, top 5, win him out. And if it works, it's great, and if it doesn't, we'll probably be losing money. But there are also a couple other things I wanted to add before we close out here. Yeah. There's a couple. I think the matchups are very interesting this weekend. I think it's kind of interesting that you can get Brooks Koepka plus money against Justin Thomas, which is...
Yeah, I think in the one I was looking at, it's like minus 125 for Thomas and minus 105 for Koepka or something like that. Like,
Oh, I have it -130 for Thomas, +110 for Koepka. Okay. And I think anytime you can get Koepka plus anything against anybody, I think you just take it.
You take a chance, yeah.
I think I like Sungjae Im -120 over Spieth. That's interesting to me. I think I like Colin Morikawa +100 against Fleetwood.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I think those are the ones I'd be sticking to. You can get your boy Ryan Palmer against my anti-boy Luke List for -125.
Interesting. Yeah, I think this is a fun week to do some head-to-head plays just because you probably get to watch more of the guys as well.
Absolutely.
That's relative because people aren't going to be awake when this tournament's on, but like, yeah, you get to see more of the guys you want to see and kind of follow those matchups a little bit more.
Absolutely. You got anything else?
Oh, I don't think so. Go Stros. What's the score right now?
2-0 Astros going to the top of the fourth.
All right. Well, I like where we are. Mattress Mac's still on the hook for me for now.
For now.
Well, I think that's all we have for you this week. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to reach out to us on social, I'm at JamesPaul4. He is at Slaughter. We've got finally got the banner, new banner up, and new thumbnail. So we'll be putting the podcast on iTunes and Spotify this week at In The Badcast. So look for us there. Happy investing to all of you this weekend. And please tune in to us next week so we can help make sure you have the right clubs and the bag.